Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and I have another wonderful guest with me today. I've got Michelle Higgins with me today, and we're just going to jump right in and talk some martial arts. I usually start with kind of giving my background, but I'll just give kind of the quick version in that I have advanced ranks in American Kenpo. Well, I guess I should say American Kenpo and Chinese Kenpo, if we want to split hairs. I have also advanced ranks in Capoeira. I've been doing that for a long time. I have recently started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I also have some experience in low level ranks in Taekwondo, Hapkido, and I did a little boxing as well. So I stay busy. So that's kind of my little cliff notes there, and we'll get into more as we go along. But I'd like to know how did the martial arts and specifically Kenpo, how did Kenpo find you, and where did it all start for you, and we'll just go from there.
Great. I sort of fell into American Kenpo. Actually, my son had responded to like a coupon promotion to try Kenpo. And I had known a little bit about this school and about Mr. and Mrs. Knight, just sort of from a distance through other students. And I thought, I really want to give it a try. And so my daughter and I also signed up for like their introductory course and really realized that this is something that was missing in my martial arts training. I have a background in Tung Sudo, and Tung Sudo fights at a much different distance than Kenpo, and realized like, wow, I'm not comfortable being close to anybody, and thought this would be a good form for my for me to develop these skills. But also it was just the school that really attracted me. I haven't looked at other Kenpo schools, or I had not. Since then, I've met many wonderful Kenpo students and have visited other schools. But I really loved the approach that this school has in making sure that people can find a place at the school and belong. Because I'm not a young chicken, I really need to make sure I'm at a school that is good for me and, my abilities and in my poor old aging body.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Just to kind of make sure that I'm clear. So you actually, you started in Tung Sudo first and then got into... Okay, so we'll jump back to the Kenpo side there, but I'm curious, when did the Tung Sudo start, and what was the driving factor for getting involved with that?
You know what? Also, my son, he was five then in 2005. He really wanted to be a Power Ranger.
I think we all do.
So we looked at several schools and really, really thought this Tung Sudo school was appropriate for our family. And that's one thing I always tell people who are thinking about starting martial arts is making sure that it's the right school for you. My whole family trained. I have a daughter, and my kids are now both adults. And my husband and I trained and... taught in the school as well. And we just decided we need to try something else. And also, that school was very, very traditional Korean, with all that comes with traditional Korean school. And, you know, as we're getting older, wanting something a little different. And so, you know, again, my son tried the Knights American Kempo School, Knight Method Kempo. And I really feel that was where I needed to be. And I love it. I love that they positively push their students and not shame them to progress. That's very important to me, because I also, I teach there now, and it's really important that my philosophy of teaching aligns with the school and, you know, the owners of the school.
So, with training, just kind of going back a little bit again, have you always had an interest in martial arts, or was it just it purely from your son's kind of standpoint?
No, I have. I've always known that, you know, I have a fire inside, that I'm not a woman who's going to back down. My mom taught me to be a very strong woman. My mom, you know, grew up in East LA. I'm from Los Angeles. My mom grew up in East LA and really instilled that in me, that, like, no matter what, you stand up for yourself. But I didn't have the skills. And so I always knew, like, I really want to do martial arts. I did do a little bit before my children were born. My husband and I did, very briefly, but then we moved for jobs. And so when I started Tung Sudo, I was already like 35. So I started late, but it just felt right for me. And I remember thinking too, like, I was already one of the older ones, and I just told myself, like, I might be old, but I'm definitely not going to be one of the old, slow people. And I loved it. I went to tournaments, you know, participated in forms and weapons and sparring. You know, we did it as a family. My kids grew up in martial arts. And now as adults, my daughter is actually training at Knight Method Kempo still. She does it actually virtually, because she's in Riverside as a PhD student. So it's really become a very integral part of our lives. And again, I love, love, love teaching. I teach children, I teach adults, and I teach their sparring classes. And I've even gotten, like, several other women, like my age, to come, who had never sparred before, to come and start, you know, figuring that piece out for them. So that, it just makes me happy.
Yeah, no, I can relate. The teaching side of it is it really just lights a fire, brings a different kind of energy, and it's always great to watch the students progress and grow, and when they accomplish things, and even when they don't accomplish things, it's good to be there and help guide them, and just marvel in all that they do. So I can relate with that. Was the teaching always something that you were interested in, or did it kind of come a little bit later into the training, or?
Yeah, so probably about halfway to my black belt in Tung Sudo, you know, I knew that they had a program to be an assistant instructor, and then to go through that to be an instructor. And I saw other students there instructing, and I thought that I want to be like them. They were really inspirational. And so, but also, you know, I come from a background of nonprofits and outreach, and have a heart for, my background is in math and physics and engineering, and so I have a passion for introducing young women to those fields. And now, you know, it's very similar type of thing, introducing young women and older women to martial arts and presenting it in a way that engages them and they can see a space for them in this field, just kind of aligns with like my whole being. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I love teaching.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. So being someone that cross trains and between the different Kenpo schools that I trained at. So I started with one lineage and then switched to a different one. And I struggled with, and I guess I still kind of struggle with it, but coming from the Tang Soo Do side, was there a period of, I don't know, deprogramming, or was it difficult to kind of change over, or
it was, and you know, other schools that I have seen, their owners or masters don't always give students a lot of grace when they are transitioning. And I distinctly remember Mr. Knight telling me, like, you'll learn the Kenpo, but don't drop your Tang Soo Do, that because that's also a skill that you will, that will help you in here. But yes, it was huge. You know, stances are different. and also just the way, you know, coming from a really traditional Korean school where most of the class is done in Korean, once you step on the mats, you are either training or you're like at attention. You don't get to lean against a wall. You don't get to stand with your arms on your, like your hands on your hips. You know, it's very, very traditional. And so I had to kind of get used to sort of the norms of the school, but also Kenpo is just so different. And it was hard for me to see like, well, how do I generate power? Like, you know, with this Kenpo stances and the moves and, you know, all of that, like I had to relearn my stability, my power, all of those things. And I can say probably, and also just like, what is the magic of Kenpo, of American Kenpo? Like, I can tell you what the magic is, like of Tang Soo Do, right? But I heard what our instructors were telling us, but I couldn't feel it. And I swear to God, probably just maybe a year ago, I started to realize like, oh, that's the secret sauce of Kenpo. Mm-hmm. It just takes a while of doing it 1,000 times. And then all of a sudden you feel it and you realize like, oh, that's my secret, you know? And so that has really deepened my like my connection to American Kenpo. I now feel like part of the system, and I feel like I sort of crossed into new territory now. I have a different understanding of the techniques, of the stances, all, you know, mm-hmm. the distance, all of those things.
Gotcha. So you mentioned working with people as far as doing the sparring. I'm curious. So in the Taekwondo world, I guess it's getting there's a lot of heat, especially with the Olympic style Taekwondo, and I guess people would say that it's getting watered down, it's getting away from the martial arts side of it, and so I'm curious with the, well, how much kind of sparring did you do in the Tangsudo, and then when you got involved in the Kenpo side, kind of what was the kind of contrast, or was it kind of easy to just get into it, or?
No, not at all. Not at all. We did a lot of sparring. You had to do so many tournaments in order to even be eligible to test for a black belt in Tangsudo. So we did tournaments. We traveled for tournaments. I loved sparring. Actually, probably like many other people, but right before I spar, I'm standing there waiting for them to call my name. My anxiety is sky high. Mm-hmm. I never, ever really saw myself as being good at sparring. I always was afraid, like, oh, this time I'm going to be terrible or whatever, every single time. But it's interesting. Once I step into the ring, all emotion drains from me. Like, people have told me, like, oh my God, your face is horrifying because there's no emotion on it. it just sort of clicks. And Tangsudo sparring is, you know, is at a much bigger distance. Like, you might come in, you know, to follow up after a kick and such, but then you're back out. And also, you're going for heavier hits, heavier, you know, more power, like fewer contacts, but heavy power. And I know, and when I first started watching people spar in Kenpo, I thought it was like, I can't tell even what they're doing, you know, because they stay inside. Occasionally, you know, you'll get back out to sort of reset, but they sort of stay in there. And I thought, oh my God, I could never do that. And I was terrified to spar. I want to say maybe within the last 3 years or so, I now have some really, really great training partners in Kenpo. There's not a lot of women, so they're men, who are really great with me, that they press me but don't hurt me. Because I work. I can't go to work with a missing tooth or a black eye. I really, really appreciate my training partners in helping me to not be afraid to move in and to stay in for a little bit. Because that was not my training and that is not my instinct. As a matter of fact, I have my favorite coffee cup. I don't know if you can see, it's backwards. It's if you're reading this, you're in my roundhouse kick.
That's very
accurate. And that's where I want to stay. I'm getting used to it. And again, I'm finding like what works in the techniques for me and incorporating that into my sparring. And I have two rules. One is don't get punched in the face, like do anything, block, get out of the way, just don't get punched in the face. And two, don't fall down. Yeah. Because like, as you get older, you have to think about your balance and all of that stuff. Because one, I don't want to fall down and hurt myself just because I did something dumb. But two, in a real fight, I never want to be on the ground if I can help it. So I have a third rule or something I think about, and it's, you're in my spot. It's even so, combining that mindset with the techniques of Kenpo makes it really, it just sort of ups the, not the power, like it ups my internal power.
Right. So Yeah. No, I like that you mentioned the, you know, being on the ground part and not wanting to be on the ground. I'm a big proponent for learning how to fall properly. And I
can fall. I learned how to fall. I just don't want anybody else falling on top of me.
Gotcha.
Either gotcha. Accidentally or on purpose.
Gotcha. Gotcha. My thought is just in that I think that there should be, I mean, there's a lot of schools that do train the falling part, but I think that there should be definitely more emphasis and earlier in the training on how to fall properly. I've seen many situations where, you know, someone takes a fall and you know, it wouldn't be a serious fall, but because they didn't position themselves right, particularly their head, a simple sweep or a simple, you know, trip or something like that turns into much more serious issue very quickly. One of the things with the Hapkido training that I love, or one of the things that I love about this particular teacher, is that we work falls every class. Big chunk of the class is dedicated to falling properly, and when we're working self-defense techniques and sparring, it's always make sure you can not only fall correctly, but you're comfortable with it. It's not I'm falling. It's like, oh, okay, well, you know, here I go. And
yeah,
big on that. Also makes you a better uke when you're working with somebody on techniques and stuff. If you're not afraid to get hit and fall, you can help your training partner better. I always kind of laugh when I'm working with people and they accidentally, you know, they give me a little tap in the face or something like that, and they're just like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. And I always tell everyone, unless I'm screaming, I'm all right, keep going. until you hear that or you see me unconscious, I'm fine. I can I can take it. So
yeah, I don't think I'm not as rough and tumble as I used to be. Now I'm more into self-preservation. You know, I think it comes with age, and you know.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely take less stuff now than I used to. Because you know, I got to go to work in the morning, so
right.
I can't get too hurt, but So going back to the competition side, in the Kempo world, besides the sparring, did you compete in any other divisions, or kind of how did your competing life go, or I should say, if you're still competing, how's that all going?
So the only competitions I've done in Kempo were the IKC, in 2024 and 2023. In 23, I just competed in forms, because that was the first time. I had never even been to a Kempo tournament. And I watched the men sparring. Oh my gosh, you know, am I ready for this? Like, I don't know. And I didn't really see any women my age then sparring. And so this last year in 24, I thought, I'm going to give it a try. And I entered the 50 plus, and there were two other women. I didn't realize that there were two divisions. One is just point sparring, which is more sport, sort of like the difference between like tungsudo sparring and taekwondo sparring, mm-hmm. right? So there was this sport, and then there was continuous sparring. And I didn't realize, I just signed up for one. I put in like, you know, your gender, your age and everything, and it pops up like what you can pick. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh yeah, I'll do sparring. But anyway, so I had not trained to just get points. That has never been part of my training, of just getting points. And so I came in third out of three. However, you know, I think the biggest thing for me was that when they called my name, I said, yes, sir, and step into the ring. And the two other women that they were good, but they also had like team uniforms, and they had a coach on the side, you know, telling them, and I'm just in there like throwing kicks and punches whenever I could. It was like a milestone for me. I don't know what I'm going to do next year. We'll see how I feel. I don't train for tournaments, mm-hmm. except like maybe for my forms. I love doing forms. I've always loved forms, starting in Tungsudo. And so I actually do a Kempo form, and I've entered in the traditional Korean or Japanese forms division. And so last year I got grand champion.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Congrats. What's your go-to form?
I love Jintae. I did that this year because that has a lot of balance work in it. And I like that a lot.
Hmm. Have you competed with Kempo form? Or?
Yeah. So I did a form that was created by Mr. Knight. And so I'm not sure like how many other people know that form. And then I did short form 4 last year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you do both the short and long versions of form 4 at your school?
Yes, but I don't know the long form.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that one. At least I'm not sure. Also, ours have like names to them. Mm-hmm. And actually, we just switched back to like short form 4 or whatever. They had names to them. And so I would show up and not realize, like, I would say the name to the judges and not realize, like, oh, yeah, that's short form 4 or something. Because we didn't use that at our school. But, you know, I don't go, like, I'm not a serious competitor. I just go just to see how I do and to meet other people, especially other women my age. I think it's, and I know I've been like saying that, but I feel like these last couple of years, I've just really felt my age a little bit more in karate. I'm going to be 60 this year, and I really have to think about my balance, like not getting hurt, because it takes forever to heal. You know, and I have some injuries that will always be with me that I need to, you know, monitor. And I'm pretty sure my toes really don't work like everybody else's toes from all the damage from kicking.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm finding sort of that deeper relationship with Kempo.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. So since I am not yet a black belt, I'm curious if you have any particularly memorable situations from when you were a colored belt that you'd like to share, and then we'll move that into, I guess, maybe talk about a black belt experience, and then maybe even talk about your first black belt test and kind of what that was like.
Okay. As a color belt, I just wanted to do my best. Like, I just wanted to make sure I was prepared, you know, doing the best at my techniques and my forms. I didn't really think about, I didn't know what it would be like to be a black belt. I just knew that, like, if I'm a green belt, or, you know, in Kenpo, you have, like, the brown belt right before, but for us, we had Chodanbo, like, your last ditch before you become a black belt, just thinking, like, I just want to be the best that I can be, and we'll see what happens next. Yeah, so what was difficult for me is I have a third degree black belt in Tangsudo, starting off as a white belt in Kenpo. There was another student who, he trained in something that was similar to Tangsudo and Shotokan a little bit, mm-hmm. but he was also a third degree, and we both started as a white belt around the same time. It just so happened, I didn't know him mm-hmm. that, you know, before that, but that was really useful to have somebody else go through the same experience of learning a new system as a baby Kenpo practitioner, you know, and having to sort of put aside what I already know and skills, you know, that I had and such. But the Knights were very gracious with that process. They always said, don't forget your Tangsudo. You know, we don't ever want you to do that. So that made it a really good experience. My first black belt test, I was so nervous. It was always like our black belt test was always the day before our school's regional tournament. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of masters that had come in and were on the panel. So you never ever knew what they were going to give you. Like, we knew we'd have to go through our forms and techniques and such, and we'd have to spar, and they would line us up by rank. And there was a woman who I got very used to sparring because she was just a little bit ahead of me, mm-hmm. bodybuilder, about 3-4 inches taller than me and a really good martial artist. And she was always my sparring partner. And when they pulled you out to spar, you had no time to put pads on. So they pulled you out. You just had to spar as is. And I remember them saying, like, you need to go in and make contact, but you better not use too much power. We're watching your control as well. Mm. Like, we had to have what we call contact, uniform contact, like just barely penetrating the uniform. Mm-hmm. And we'd go until the judges said to stop, and we would take up the whole dojo because they would pull us out, you know, one pair at a time. And I remember and there would be parents there at the test, like sitting around the dojo. And I remember the parents would come up to me and say, like, the best part of coming to sparring is watching you and Diane spar, or to the test, because they were long, you know, and because, again, and she was also really determined. She was about my age, and we're like, we're not holding back. We like, we don't have any more time left to, like, hold back and wait. So we really did a good job. And then I, like, you never knew what the judges would ask you to do or to break. I remember I'd never, like, we had a kick called a spinning wheel kick. Mm-hmm. where you hit with the back of your heel. And so I could do that and I could break with it. But they said, okay, you have to do a jump spinning wheel kick. Never done it before. I'm like, okay, here it goes, nothing. You know, and everybody's watching you. You cannot have any like reservation. You just have to let everything out. And that was really awesome. That really trained you, I think, to be a martial artist, to just put everything that you have into it. And that I thought was really cool, because there's not too many things in life where you're asked to put 100% in. Mm-hmm. So, and then like for our, I don't know if other schools do this, but for our second degree black belt test, we had to spar two people at once. With the third, we had to spar three, and one person had like a fake knife. Oh. Sometimes, not for everybody, but just depends on.
Nice, yeah. Keep them guessing.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was terrifying, but you know, once they get in there, like you just have to go. I think most schools kind of do the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about just really. Testing you, pushing you to your limits, you know, really, making you work for it and making you earn it. And that's what you need, you know, not only for a black belt, but, I would say for all the belts, you gotta put in the work. I was at a test, a few weeks ago, and, there were a couple of ladies and a gentleman, that were testing. The gentleman was testing for his blue belt, and he had a background. He came from a Shotokan school, and then the other two ladies, I don't believe they had any previous training, but they were both training for their testing for their orange belt, and they all had to fight and spar, and I was like, wow, like this is pretty intense. It's the first school that I trained at. We didn't have to fight on a test until green belt. And then at my current school, kind of depending on how many people we have at the time, would kind of determine whether or not you had to fight for the belts. But I was pretty shocked. It's like so early on, you have to fight, at the school. That, I mean, even for the yellow belt, they have to spar for it. And I was like, that's pretty intimidating, but also I'm in love with that. So,
yeah. When I was learning how to be a martial artist in the Tung Sudo school, we did have to spar for every belt test. And we all knew, though, that we can, no matter what belt you have, you cannot be out of control.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, if they have good techniques, then it makes sparring easier, but, you know, it's really hard if somebody's kind of wild, and because I don't want to hurt them, but none of that was tolerated, so we didn't see anything that was dangerous type of thing, because if they did, the master would take them down, you know? Mm-hmm. It very much was like sparring with respect, you know, because also it's my job to press my partner, but not to press them in the corner and make them cry type of thing, you know? So I think there was just that understanding of who is my partner and what does it look like when I spar with them? We had to know that.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. And I like it. It's about, you know, building people up and not, putting them in, you know, putting them down or making them feel bad. You want them to keep coming back to keep training with you. So, you know, just like we talked about before, you want them to grow and to build up. So, you gotta push them, but not till they break. Just right on that line. So,
And we had, you know, I think we had to really start learning that even as a white belt, you know, kind of watching our seniors.
Very nice. Okay. All right. So we're going to go ahead and move into our lightning round here. Got a few questions for you as we head towards wrapping up. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
I do. I'm not sure what everybody else calls it. It's circling horn and ram. I'm not sure. Because you know what? At the very end, there's a rising side kick, and I love that it can go right to the throat. And right. Before you do that, you can walk right through your student. I mean, right through your partners. I love it.
Very nice. I like it. I like it. All right. Next one. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
I love stance set. I love, I want to say, I don't know very many, but I short form 4.
Very nice. I like it. One thing that I've definitely been surprised about in doing this show is, there's been a lot of love for stance set. Quite a few of my previous guests have picked that one. So I like that. I would not have expected that. I expected and I do get a lot of the short form 4 or long 4, short 3. I think are probably the top ones. And then for those that are in some of the other lineages, some people have mentioned my favorites, Book Set and Tiger and Crane, which most American Kenpo schools don't teach anymore. But those are my favorites. But yeah, stance set gets a lot of love, so I like it.
Oh, good.
All right, next one. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Knife.
Very
definitely
nice.
Definitely knife.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. I like it. All right. Next question. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, besides Ed Parker, who would that be? And you can include people that you have already trained with if you want. But
I love the way Michelle Yao moves.
Very nice.
I want to move like her.
Very nice. She is something else, pretty amazing. So that's a great answer. I like that. So the second part of that question is, any fictional character, who would you like to train with?
One of the professors in Hogwarts, because oh my gosh, I really wish that I could add spells to my techniques. I absolutely would. Absolutely.
Very nice. Yeah. I like
yes.
That. I like that. Very nice. All right. So now we are at our point for a shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything you want, or if there's anything that you wanted to get out there that we hadn't touched upon, you have the floor. And just go ahead and put it out there.
Okay. So I am part of the International Women of Kenpo. We really exist to support women in Kenpo, and we do that through symposia. So we have one coming up on April 6th on mental health in martial arts, and we have several mental health experts to come in and talk about it. One of the things I absolutely love about Kenpo, I have a really stressful job and a very big job. And as soon as I get on the mats, like, I don't think about anything else. There's nothing better to bring you into the present you know, to practice mindfulness, all of those things that are supposed to give you sort of stability in your day-to-day life. And so I'm very much looking forward to that symposium. We have done other symposia. We did one on young women across pretty much the globe doing martial arts. And we just added ambassadors to in other countries. I know we've added two in Kenya that I'll be reaching out to help them to help support women in Kempo in their regions. And so that really aligns with kind of my whole being of standing up, you know, with and for others. So I'm really proud. My role on there is I'm in my professional life, I do program evaluation. And so that's what I am on the board, and I help with that to make sure that they're doing what they said they're going to do and measuring the extent to which they meet their outcomes. So, yeah.
All right. Very, very, very nice. So I thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and chat with me and share your story, and look forward to seeing what you do next. And definitely welcome to be on anytime.
One more thing.
Oh yeah.
More thing. I'm working with my school, Knight Method Kempo, to help them start up a nonprofit branch of their school that will offer scholarships, support, sort of be an auxiliary organization. We've now, I worked with them last year to do a tournament. And so we're going to have a yearly tournament. So the board will help with that as well. So.
Okay. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. Any links and things like that, be sure to send to me, and I will make sure that they get added to the show notes. And I just once again thank you for being on, and we'll definitely have to do this
thank
again
you.
And I can't wait to get this out for everyone to hear, and I will be in touch when this is ready to go out. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkempo.com. Thank you.